Providing culturally affirming care for Black women must take place at both the systemic and individual levels. What are the important actions that we as clinicians are taking outside of the therapy setting that are congruent with the way in which we are providing a healing environment and individual therapy for Black women? Are we even willing to do the personal work by asking ourselves, in what way have we ourselves benefited from the oppression and inequitable treatment of Black women? What are the seemingly adaptive schemas to look out for? Do we understand from a historical context how those schemas can also be dehumanizing and can impede the therapeutic alliance? Welcome to People of Color in Psychology, the show that explores mental health topics specific to culture, diversity, and communities of color. I am your host, Jack Tsen. Our guest today is Dr. Kimber Shelton. She is a licensed psychologist in private practice, specializing in cultural diversity, LGBTQ+ issues, trauma, and relationships. As a national and international speaker, Dr. Shelton has provided culturally competent training to thousands of clinicians. An award-winning psychologist, she is the 2023 Black Mental Health Symposium Distinguished Practitioner of the Year. She is the former Diversity Division Co-Chair for Texas Psychological Association, member of the APA Committee on Sexual Orientation and Gender Diversity, and is a fellow of the APA Minority Fellowship Program. In addition to her clinical work, Dr. Shelton is the co-editor of a handbook on counseling African American women, psychological symptoms, treatments, and case studies. Dr. Shelton, along with her co-editors, are hosting the Freedom Movement, Liberating Black Women's Mental Wellness Conference in Atlanta, Georgia, on Friday, October 13th, 2023. As a Black psychologist, Dr. Shelton will be discussing how to provide culturally responsive care, which much of the work happens outside of the therapy room. And she will be providing a glimpse into her recent book on counseling African American women. Dr. Shelton, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, I am so excited about this upcoming conference, as well as the book that you've co-edited with several authors. But before we launch into that, can you walk me through your journey, your origin story? Share with me some memorable events that has led to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to the conference as well. And yeah, I feel like the conference and the book are very much connected to my journey as a psychologist and helping professional. And there's many different pieces that connect to where I am today. But one of the most salient factors for me is the relationship I had with my grandmother. So I feel very fortunate to have grown up in a lower middle class than a middle class family. But that experience was very different from the experience of my grandmother, who lived in poverty her entire life, maybe had a sixth, seventh grade education, was a single mother to 8 children. So I grew up in upstate New York, Western New York, and my family's from Beckley, West Virginia. And we saw them often. I would spend the summers with my grandmother. My life in Buffalo, New York was very different from her life in Beckley. So when we would go places, I would see how she was treated and dismissed and minimized or ignored. And that was very different from my experiences, even as a 10-year-old. So at 10, 11, 12, 13, I found myself arguing with people in the grocery store and asking what's taking so long for my grandmother to be seen, really advocating for her. And didn't understand it at that time, but didn't have the language for it. But there was gender racism that she was experiencing. And knowing my grandmother's worth and how beautiful she was, I don't know if she ever fully recognized those things. And it was so important for me that other Black women who may be like my grandmother would be able to live within their worth and their beauty. So my relationship with her was very important in starting my advocacy, my focus on social justice, and wanting people to be able to show up fully.
Wow. I think it's quite amazing that you saw the beauty. And there's also some pain and sadness that your mm-hmm. grandmother was not able to express that beauty because mm-hmm. of her experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. That I think much of her life was focused on surviving and living and not having much chance to rest or just appreciate peace in the ways that everyone deserves, in the way that I wish that she would have had. Power from those experiences, really wanting to set a different foundation for myself and her continued legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're bringing that experience and the social justice framework in your work, and also being named one of the top psychologists in 2023. And so I'm wondering, tell me about this book, as well as maybe some of the things you'd like to share, so we can also create, I'll put a link in our show notes so people can actually get this on Amazon, correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, so this book is co-edited by myself and Dr. Michelle Lin, who's at Oglethorpe University's Counseling Center. She's the director there, and Dr. Mahalet Ndali, who is in private practice in Atlanta, Georgia. And interestingly, we've had a similar career trajectory that we all were at University of Georgia at different times. We all worked at Georgia State, overlapping. Then we overlapped again, working at Georgia Tech. And shout out to Georgia Tech for graduating more Black engineers than any other university in the country. And because that worked with a lot of young Black women there, and just in general over our careers. So Handbook on Counseling African-American Women is co-edited by myself, Dr. Michelle Lin, who's at Oglethorpe University in Atlanta, and Dr. Mahalet Ndali, who's in private practice in Atlanta. And we've worked together at three different university and institutions, all identifying as Black women and having had tremendous experience working with Black women. In around 2016, just looking at the resources that Black women we were working with had or did not have, I approached him to write this book. 2016 actually felt like a very relevant time for this book to come out. However, we had a hard time finding a publisher. So tried to find a publisher in many different ways. Eventually, we were able to sign a contract with Quaker to publish it. But that was even confusing why it was a struggle for us to find a publisher for this important work. And we started writing the book around 2019 or so. And we were writing it as well as our co-authors, who are primarily Black women who are experts in Black women's mental health, but also have their own counseling experience as clients. We were writing this during 2020. So not only were we writing and editing at that time, we were also living during the strong initiation of the Black Lives Matter movement, of seeing so many Black men and women being victimized and murdered publicly. So all those things were kind of integrated within the writing of this book. And I think that really highlights the experiences of Black women, that Black women are strong and resilient and beautiful and competent, while also struggling with oppression, violence, abuse, trauma, all those things were collected within this book. So the book, I think, nicely highlights the full experience of Black women. And again, being written by Black women, for us to be able to tell our stories, which really honors our experiences in a way that when stories are told about us or books are written about us, doesn't fully capture and honor that experience. So it's a beautiful book in that regard. And then the focus of the book is for more mental health professionals to be competent in working with Black women, that Black women need to be able to see more than only other Black women therapists. There's only about 2 to 4% of therapists who are Black. So all therapists need to be competent in doing this work. So the book focuses on ways that we can improve our cultural competence. It talks about different therapy models and working with Black women, culturally relevant models. And then we also focus on some specific populations and working with Black women.
Wow. So it's like the book is geared towards mental health professionals across the board, not just for Black women, right. But, you know, basically the idea of how to work with Black women. And one of the things that is critical here that I've actually been hearing a theme when people talk about culturally responsive care, how it requires some internal work. And you mentioned how much of the work actually happens outside of the therapy room. Mm-hmm. So do you have any tips or frameworks when we think about what do we mean by work outside of therapy room? Are there concrete steps that we can take as clinicians?
Yeah, well, starting with the work inside therapy, that's that cultural competence, which is going to be the awareness piece, the clinician having awareness into their own identity, their own cultural identity, who they are, but not just awareness of their identity, how their identity then impacts their experiences of the world or how their identity can impact others. So being reflective and asking ourselves things like, where do our messages about who Black women are or how Black women behave come from? What are the relationships I have with Black women? How do I benefit from Black women's oppression? Being self-reflective into ourselves, but then also reflective in how our identities are going to impact the Black women that we work with and where these messages came from, in case there are messages that we need to unlearn and then relearn. So that awareness piece, the next part of cultural competence is knowledge piece. So being knowledgeable about who Black women are, what is the Black community, what are values within the Black community. And we're not a monolithic group, so there's going to be great diversity there, but have an understanding of historical markers that impact Black women today, understanding current sociocultural experiences that are happening that are going to impact the mental health of Black women. And then finally, that piece of having the skills, so the ability to operationalize culturally specific and culturally sensitive interventions in working with Black women. The research shows that when we're using culturally adaptive approaches for anyone who is identifying as a person of color, typically those adaptive interventions are going to work better than those interventions that are not adaptive. So for example, a classic CBT model may not be so effective in working with Black women that's focused on changing their thoughts, and then they can feel different and changing those behaviors when, because so much of that is just focused on the individual, when my thoughts may actually be very appropriate for the situation and I don't need to reframe or reconstruct my thought. I need to figure out how to deal with racism I'm experiencing at work, but the belief that I'm experiencing racism is not something that needs to be changed or different. So that's the work that's going to happen within the therapy realm. So important for clinicians to be culturally competent. And then we look at a culturally humble or cultural humility. So we think about cultural competence as skills, things that we're doing, versus that cultural humility or multicultural orientation is more of a way of being. We are or we aren't multiculturally oriented. A way of being ourselves, but then also a way of being with the other person. So when we are focused on being with Black women, number one, we have to believe them. We have to believe the things that Black women are telling us when they come in. And that could be hard to believe those things, especially when we're talking about the trauma and oppression that Black women are experiencing, because we don't want to believe these things exist. We don't want to know that their world is there, but we must believe them so that we're not having this betrayal trauma of Black women being hurt outside of the session, and then they're coming into therapy and they're still not being believed.
So can you give me an example of, when you're saying, you know, believe what Black women are telling you in the therapy room, I'm thinking, duh. You know, if they're saying, hey, my boss did this or this happened at work, I'm sorry, I'm a little biased in saying, wait, how can that, why would one dismiss that? So, but anyways, Can you give me an example of maybe something that may be, I don't know, somehow gets dismissed? Maybe a common thing that gets dismissed. Maybe I do it as well, and I don't know, because I am on a journey.
Yeah. Well, for a lot of Black women, that concept of the strong Black woman or that superwoman schema is very well ingrained and internalized in us, in that we always are competent, always together, always doing, always strong, never being able to be vulnerable or being able to be weak. And that is both a source of resiliency, but it's also is painful for Black women because it reduces our humanity, that we don't have access to a full range of emotions that other people, other women are able to lean into. And it's birthed in trauma that because of our history of enslavement and segregation and oppression, yes, we have to be strong. It doesn't mean that we desire or want to be strong. We've had to be strong. It's birthed in trauma. So when a Black woman is coming in and she's saying, I can't relax, I have to take care of so many people, I'm working late at my job, I'm having a hard time managing all these things. And we say, okay, let's look at some self-care interventions. And then she's saying, nah, these things aren't going to work for me. We have to believe that those things will not work. It is not take a bath or get your nails done. We have to believe my life has not been set up for me to be able to take care of myself. So suggestions of simple self-care are not going to be effective. We need to get into those internalized messages, into the systems that maintain Black women having to be strong and are setting these unrealistic expectations for them. So it's believing them in terms of, if I say my boss inappropriately touched me, to believe that, but it's also the belief in these changes or these things that you want me to focus on are going to look different for me. And believe me when I'm saying that's going to be harder, challenging for me, understanding how my identity is going to be impacted by that.
Oh, I love that example. I can go on a soapbox about self-care because, you know, self-care requires time and money, which is privilege. Get your nails done. How much does that cost? Okay.
Get
your, a lot, exactly. And how are you going to find a time if you are working multiple jobs?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. Okay. But that is such a great example. And in hearing out, okay, when we're discussing, for instance, strategies to necessarily cope, and I put in air quotes, cope, and we're suggesting things like self-care or behavioral activation, and then we need to go exercise, do all these things, for Black women to say, you know, that's not going to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying here is, oh, we need to take that and say, wait, hold on a second. It's not that my client is being resistant.
Mm-hmm.
We need to take us further and say, what's going on where this intervention is working? What is it? What am I asking of my client here?
Mm-hmm.
What are her experiences that's making this difficult? Mm-hmm. And the messages, like you're saying, if she were to take time off, and then what would that mean for her? I'm no longer fulfilling this resilient, strong Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And if I don't have space for my vulnerability to be appreciated, if I am vulnerable, it might be true, I cannot depend on others. So we have to move even slowly into that realm. But to not make the mistake of she's being resistant, this is defensive, treatment rejecting, she's angry, we've then missed what she's expressing to us and who she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for clarifying that. And I'm sorry, I went on a tangent. You were describing the different steps that we need to consider in our own work when we're working with Black women. Number one is not to dismiss what they're telling you in therapy. What are the other steps?
Yeah. So to believe Black women, and then many of the mental health issues and concerns that Black women face have very little to do with being a Black woman or who Black women are, and has much to do with how the world is interacting with our Blackness and our womanness. So when therapists are doing the work outside of therapy, the impact may even be more significant than the work that we're doing inside of therapy with Black women. The way we show up and vote is going to be so important to the mental health and the well-being of Black women. If we are voting for laws and policies that are against the humanity of Black women, how are we able to then sit in a session and work to empower Black women when we are actively disempowering them outside of session? So how we are voting, what is our school board looking like? When we are on these apps and these considerations are being made about zoning policies, what are our comments around those messages that are there? How are we working within our spheres of influence to change dynamics or to change the system? How are we challenging others? Those are the things that are going to have the most impact on Black women. When Black women are paid the same amount that their counterparts are paid, a lot of our issues just simply vanish, just having the income that we need. So for therapists to move beyond the session and to understand how personally they are impactful in the work that's being done outside of session.
We're scaling back, pulling the microscope back and looking at the contextual, the social systemic issue here. Mm-hmm. If I can interact with the system and mm-hmm. try to be a part of supporting a system that advocates for Black women, mm-hmm. then I think as I'm talking out loud and as you're sharing this, there is a deep appreciation of, well, I'm not just doing it individually within my therapy room. And almost as we're talking about this, if I just do this therapy work in the therapy room, it almost seems like a privileged stance, because mm-hmm. I can just leave the therapy room, close mm-hmm. the door. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I am actively voting, actively considering and thinking about the policies that are around me and my community or others or other communities, there mm-hmm. is a deeper connection.
Yeah, I think that ties more closely to the culture of humility, where we try to come as close as possible to understanding that person and that experience, while recognizing that our own identities will never let us fully be able to go step in step with that person. So we're humble in that degree, but in coming as close as we can, then we are activated to do as much as we can to honor, have compassion, empower that person. And again, we cannot focus on empowering someone in a session and then act in ways that disempower them outside of the session.
What a great point. Now, the conference is coming up mm-hmm. and a little over a month, right? October 13th, we're in August. Days blur nowadays. Okay. But the conference is coming up. And do you want to share anything about the upcoming conference for mm-hmm. our listeners?
Yeah, super excited about this conference coming up. This is actually our second conference. Last year, we hosted a virtual conference that was attended by participants in four different parts of the world. So from four different countries, the feedback from that conference was, thank you, we appreciate this. This was needed. This has changed my experiences working with Black women. Black women healers themselves were expressing how appreciative they were of being able to be in that space. This year, we are doing the conference in person in Atlanta at the Historic Academy of Medicine. Really looking forward to that. And there's going to be four workshops over the course of the day that are focused on neurobiology and how racism and gender racism impacts Black women's health. It's going to look at critical race theory and ways that we can decolonize our practice, looking at boundaries, but moving beyond just boundaries, how Black women setting boundaries can create intergenerational change, and then ending with a panel discussion on that we Black women must be liberated for us all to be liberated. And if we're not liberated, then no one is able to be liberated. So it's going to be a phenomenal conference. We have some world-class speakers coming in to lead these fabulous workshops. So yeah, very excited for offering CEs for master's level, PhD level clinicians. So very excited about this conference.
Wow. Wow, this is such a huge undertaking. You're doing clinical work, writing a book, and hosting a conference. Oh my gosh. Oh gosh, that is a lot.
Yeah, okay. I'll sleep after October 13th.
October 13th. Okay. You can rest after that. So, Dr. Shelton, another amazing thing about your conference that I remember reading is that we have the opportunity to sponsor students to attend this conference.
Absolutely. If you're not able to attend, or if you want to attend with your students, that students can be sponsored. Sponsorship for students is only $65. So simple to sign them up on our website at counselingblackwomen.com. We want as many students to be at this training as possible. And students say, we want more of this training. So this is a perfect opportunity for them.
Great, great. Now, for organizations or other therapists who don't have a specific student in mind, so for example, the Multicultural Counseling Institute, we would love to sponsor a student. I don't have a student to attend this conference. How would we do that?
Same process. Just go to the website and there's a easy button to click to sponsor a student. And then as students are wanting to attend and may have some hardship, we're able to then grant them that scholarship.
Fantastic. Thanks for that information. Of course, again, it really speaks to just the whole spirit of really conveying how do you support the growth process from early on, because when we think about access to education, access to representation, how it starts at such an early phase. So we want to provide that opportunity at the student level.
Yes, and this will be a beautiful networking opportunity for students.
So now let's talk a little bit about, can you share with me, as a woman of color, what were some of the challenges you faced and overcame that you would be willing to share?
So throughout my education, I had pretty limited access to Black professionals. So from K through 12, I had one teacher of color. In my undergrad experience, there was one faculty of color, none in my master's program, and then in my PhD program, then started to have access to more faculty of color. But just there was just not a lot of opportunities to connect with professors of color or teachers in color, of color. And I think those things did impact my own racial identity and then the models that I was learning too. So my master's program, we had to do a final collection piece. And one part of that collection was our identity as a clinician. And I had written that I didn't want to be seen as a Black woman therapist. I simply want to be seen as a competent therapist. And my advisor, who is a white man from Arkansas, he read that over, and we in my conference, he was saying, you might want to think about that. And have this white man from Arkansas say, you might want to think about that. For him to notice my dismissal of my identity and then to call that out brought extreme shame in that moment. I felt so ashamed that I needed a white man to call me out on that. But then also that I would diminish myself or dismiss those parts of my identity, that of course me coming in as a Black woman is going to be impactful on my clinical work. The way that I think, the values that I hold, the way that I carry myself, all these things are connected to who I am as a Black woman. So felt extreme shame in that moment. And then when we feel shame, we either double down on our feelings and it becomes more solidified and we reject what others have to say about us, or we allow ourselves to grow from that experience. And that was definitely a growth moment for me. One, I feel like that was a good representation of what allyship looks like and how people who are not people of color can be allies for people of color. And then two, being able to step back into myself and my identity and those questions that I was saying earlier that we reflect on of who am I, what does this mean to me, how am I benefiting from the oppression of Black women, I had to really ask myself those things and where was my internalized oppression coming from. And then moving forward, really solidifying my commitment that as therapists, we need to, as we're encouraging our clients to show up as themselves, we're also needing to show up as ourselves, especially when we're working with people of color. Having that authentic and genuine relationship is going to be based on our own authenticity. So really focus on bringing all of myself into the therapy room so that our clients can feel welcome to do the same thing.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I can, as you're describing that experience, I can feel it. to have a white faculty member call this out, mm-hmm. and then also the shame, mm-hmm. like, oh gosh, well, why am I hiding this? Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm presumptuous, maybe a little bit of defensiveness when mm-hmm. one gets called out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, surprisingly, I don't think I felt I think the shame was so great, I wasn't able to feel a lot of other emotions. But fortunately, in wanting to rectify that shame, I feel like I was able to better lean into my identities.
Well, definitely you were also focusing on the growth, wanting to learn mm-hmm. and wanting to become whole, because it's like someone gives you a message, they shatter your mm-hmm. makeup, your identity, and then for you to organically come together again mm-hmm. as a whole. Identity, all aspects of yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly was at some beginning stages of that, as well as that oppression, which I didn't realize I had fully internalized. I also very much did internalize that strong Black woman schema. So throughout my work, you know, I was going to be that A student. If I was challenged with something, I would stay up all night. So the next day I came in, I was going to be fully prepared for those things. And to a degree, that benefited me in terms of having opportunities available and having some doors open. But again, it was hurtful in that people who were not doing those same things, they still got the same degree that I had, and they had maybe some different opportunities that they didn't have to work as hard for. Another pretty impactful moment for me was during my PhD internship and finally had exposure to multiple Black women psychologists. And I was in supervision with one of these women at Georgia State's Counseling Center and was not even realizing that I was struggling or how hard I was working until my supervisor said, "Slow down, what's going on?" And I said, "Well, I don't want to disappoint you." And then my supervisor began to cry. I immediately began crying. That you could never disappoint me. You get to just show up and be you. You don't have to do all this extra work. You don't have to be perfect. Just really giving that permission to let go of that superwoman complex. And then her ability to be vulnerable was just so humanizing and allowing me to be vulnerable as well.
Wow. That is just, you know, in many ways, as you're describing that, both you and the supervisor mm-hmm. to create that space. Mm-hmm. And even though there is a tinge of sadness, as mm-hmm. I felt when you were describing that, there's mm-hmm. also a space of relief mm-hmm. as you were describing that. Oh gosh, I don't have to keep holding up this image, mm-hmm. this byproduct of survival, yeah. much like the experience mm-hmm. your grandmother went through, the pressures mm-hmm. to have to survive. Yeah. Well, Dr. Shelton, is there any last words or any other final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
So appreciative of Black women who are living in this dual world of strength and also fighting to be in this world of resistance and coming into their humanity, even when others challenge that, and wanting therapy to be an environment that is healing and transformative for them. And for therapy to be healing and transformative, then the therapy environment needs to transform for them. just to encourage clinicians to do that work so we can create these spaces for Black women to be able to come in, escalate themselves, and get that healing that they are so deserving of.
Great, great. Well, thank you very much for your message. Thank you very much for your time and all the work that you're doing. All right, Dr. Shelton, thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you liked this episode. Please subscribe and share. We'd love to hear from you, so send me a message on LinkedIn or email. The People of Color in Psychology is brought to you by the Multicultural Counseling Institute, and I'm your host, Jack Sutton.